now in the case of Hanover Insurance Company against Northern Building Company. Mr. Behan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Behan, and I represent Tom Van Dinen and Northern Building Company. It's an honor to be here. This is actually the very first time we've ever made any form of substantive argument in court in any of these proceedings. I will be actually fairly brief in my comments. I was struck by the fact that so many people left after the first argument. The irony to me is that, in fact, some of the issues of this case can actually affect people far more than probably the issues of that case. I don't think many of us will actually be in the ability of doing the horse trading that occurred perhaps in that particular matter. But my point and the point that I would like to really raise with this court is the fact that the justice system can do better than it has in this case. The fact of the matter is that I raised a number of issues in my brief. I don't think any of these issues are terribly complicated issues. The fact remains that ultimately there is an order in place ordering my client individually, Tom Van Dinen, and the company that he created, Northern Building Company, to pay $76,000 in attorney's fees on what was originally a $127,000 contract dispute that he was in a position to have actually defended and prevailed upon. The insurance company chose to end that litigation and strike a deal with the contractor Parsons, who was holding funds for the FAA, and turn those funds over to the claimants in the underlying matter.
Well, counsel, that's your problem. The contract seems to give the bonding company exactly that power. Why don't we read the language to mean what it says?
And they did. And I agree with you, Your Honor. They had the power to actually cut the deal that they did and turn the $127,000 over to.
As soon as you say that, this appeal is deceased.
I disagree with you with all due respect, Your Honor, because the issue is much broader than just simply the matter upon which Hanover agreed to make the payment of the $127,000. Why, with due respect, I disagree with you, Your Honor, is this. That $127,452.78 was not their money, and nor were they on the hook for the payment of that money. That money was being held, in essence, in escrow by the contractor for the FAA, Parsons. And so what Hanover did is they came in and they, by their own argument.
We're well aware of what happened.
Okay.
Couldn't Northern
What language in the contract are you relying on for the proposition that the judiciary will decide who owed what to whom, given that the contract seems to say that Hanover will make that decision? They're effectively an arbitrator. So what language in the contract are you relying on?
I'm not. I'm not relying on any language in the contract.
Well, as I say, this deal is then doomed.
I mean, the indemnity agreement says that Hanover's submission as to what it incurred in attorney's fees is conclusive. So, I mean, why would we hold a hearing, let alone a jury trial? We'd be undoing the agreement.
Well, I think that the policy issues, though, of the – and that's where, with respect to the argument that I raised in the brief, it creates really huge public policy problems from the standpoint of
Then sign a different agreement the next time, and you won't have policy problems.
We have people come here and say arbitration is bad, and the answer is don't sign an arbitration agreement. You signed this bond. You are bound. Well, your client is bound. You didn't sign. Your client is bound. That's just the way contract works. You don't come to court later on and say, well, our contract is bad. I mean, the usual word for that is frivolous.
I understand, Your Honor. That's not what occurred here, though, with all due respect. The fact of the matter is that
you told me that under the contract, the bonding company wins, that you are not relying on any language in the contract, and indeed your brief just ignores the language of the contract, that certainly is the hallmark of frivolous, vexatious, and unnecessary litigation.
Well, number one, I didn't initiate this litigation. I was defending.
You certainly initiated this appeal. The district court said you haven't a leg to stand on. You then appeal and ignore the language of the contract. Frivolous seems the least, the most favorable word that could be applied.
But, Your Honor, I, with all due respect, I disagree with that. I don't know what more my client could do in this particular
case. Sign a different contract.
Yeah. Or, you know, post collateral with Hanover while it contested McDonald's right to payment. I mean, there were things that could have.
Yep, your client could have put up the money, too. That's the other thing.
My client didn't have the money. I mean, in all due respect, Your Honor, my client didn't have.
Well, you're trying to make a policy argument that, in general, this is a bad thing to do. And, of course, as my colleagues have indicated, then don't do it. Right?
Well, what opportunity does my client have other than to make the argument that he's at least entitled to
negotiate for different language in the bonding agreement? Doubtless the bonding company will ask for higher payment in exchange for something that would allow its decision to be contested. But those are the terms of trade. You get a low-cost bond where the bonding company is in charge, or you pay more for a bond where you have extra rights. That's the way the world works. You don't buy the low-cost bond and then proceed as if you had some other language.
Yeah.
I do believe that the contract itself does not allow for Hanover to just submit whatever attorney's fees that it wishes.
You just told me you weren't relying on any language in the contract.
I disagree.
And your brief completely ignores the language of the contract and the reasons you lost this case in the district court, which were entirely based on the language of the contract.
And Hanover did document what it paid in fees.
I still believe that there is an obligation to establish that those are reasonable fees.
Why?
Because they are based upon the contract.
What language are you relying on for that proposition?
As I articulated in the and I obviously can see what the court, I'm not trying to.
There's no rule that lawyers' arguments override contractual language. There's just none.
But there would have to be some form of good faith in establishing the reasonableness of.
Where does it come from? The way many markets work is that people rely on the reputation of a particular entity that has, under the contract, perfect discretion. If you look at the way arbitration works, people go to the American Arbitration Association, and there's no review of the merits of an arbitration award. Mm. We don't ask if the arbitrator acted reasonably. But if arbitrators at the AAA start acting unreasonably, people won't use it anymore. That's how the market works. You can't come and say the arbitrator acted unreasonably. Well, that's the way this contract works. Hanover gets to arbitrate the dispute between your client and the subcontractor. That's what it says.
Hanover had nothing at risk whatsoever, which makes it quite different.
Exactly. It's acting as a bonding company to make sure one side gets paid, and under the contract, unless somebody goes bankrupt in between, it's going to be whole. It's acting as an arbitrator. So you are effectively asking us to upset an arbitrator's decision on the ground that you think the arbitrator made a mistake or acted unreasonably. And there are some pretty firmly established principles saying courts don't do that.
I understand. If I may, the distinction, though, that I would draw, Your Honor, is this. This is not a circumstance upon which the arbitrator isn't profiting. The arbitrator is the attorney's firm for the Hanover Insurance Company that is actually seeking to have my client pay it over $49,000 for reaching its determination upon which it billed $26,000. Well, I think that there is the basis upon which they're seeking the additional fees between $26,000 and $76,000 is not rooted in the contract. The contract allows for Hanover Insurance Company to bill reasonable fees for its investigation. That they set out at $26,000, which didn't meet the jurisdictional limitation of the district court. The district court allowed the case to go forward and ultimately determined that in collecting that $26,000, it should be awarded $49,000 additional. The $26,000, with all due respect, Your Honor, because I know I can see what you feel about my argument, but
you're going now to your jurisdictional argument. The district court discussed this with care. And to be charitable, the district judge suggested that you or your predecessor should take a law school course in federal jurisdiction.
Your Honor, I'm doing the best that I can on behalf of my client.
We understand that. That's the thing. But what you probably are getting the sense of, that there's not much your client's going to recover from.
Even if your client asks you to take an appeal, a lawyer has an ethical obligation not to pursue frivolous litigation.
With all due respect,
your client's request does not overcome that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would respectfully submit that the client is entitled to a hearing as to the reasonableness of the fees based upon the contract between the $26,000 amount and the $76,000 amount that were awarded. That portion is not something that the contract gives carte blanche Hanover Insurance Company to make its determination as to what that fee would be. When it submitted $26,000, $742.49, as the cost for its investigation. If I may borrow, Your Honor, from your analogy, the arbitrator, that's the arbitrator fee. That's not what occurs here when the ultimate judgment is $76,016.69.
It might be better if your client hired you prior to signing the agreement rather than afterwards.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that.
Be here.
So, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Behan.
Thank you.
Mr. Kellender.
Hey, please the court. My name is Eric Shalander. I represent Hanover.
Not much to say?
How would things have proceeded if Northern had posted collateral with Hanover?
Well, I think that the indemnity agreement provides that ability for Northern to post collateral to dispute the claim. In this case, it's important to note that Hanover was actually sued by McDaniels as well. I mean, so Hanover had, they had a lawsuit that they had to deal with. So Hanover settled the claim after the defendants refused to post collateral. And then after the lawsuit in this case was filed, after Hanover had paid out the entire claim to McDaniel, the case wasn't, or the settlement agreement with the owner wasn't reached until months after this case started, and Hanover then received the remaining contract funds after the job was completed. Northern Building had been terminated on the project, and that's why the remaining contract funds were held by the owner, as it would be on any project. There wasn't any sort of escrow or any sort of deal that had been cut, as the defendants have claimed. There's a couple points I wanted to reference, and I think we talked about most of the contractual terms. Counsel repeatedly asked for an evidentiary hearing on these fees, and I think we've discussed the Hanover complied with the contract. I think they had an ability to file two briefs. The defendants had copies of all of Hanover's invoices for attorney fees, which they had the ability to review.
In light of Mr. Behan's argument, do you think it is necessary for you to argue?
That was my question. You were going to be very short, right?
I'm done. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Behan? There isn't much you could rebut.
I don't think there's much probably to rebut with respect to. I'd like to thank the court for its time. I've done the best that I can on behalf of my client.
You have.
It's a difficult set of circumstances.
Thank you, Mr.
Behan.
You
have.
The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.